Python machine. So Timo's project is starting now, is to build this machine and to have it in a few months. And so this is a good occasion to stress that the Neurospin Center is a platform which is available to all. So if some of you are interested in developing projects with us, and it's not just MR. The idea is the marriage of neuroscience and physics, so whichever physical machines can help us to understand the brain. So of course, magnetic resonance is a strong feature of the Neurospin Center. There are six MRs, three of them for animals. And you may have seen in the newspaper, we received just 2 weeks ago this new magnet at 11 Tesla for MR in humans. So MR is definitely a very strong point of neurospin, but there is also magnetoencephalography for humans, there is electroencephalography for humans, including babies, and soon there will be this three-photon machine, which will also supplement the ability that we have to do electrophysiology. A little bit of advertising, but we would love to have colleagues that help us develop and use these techniques. Brice Batelier, who's just arriving, is our very close colleagues from GIF, who is helping us with the two-photon imaging and soon three-photon. And I may mention also, perhaps, Brice, that next to Neurospin, there is right now a new building being built, which is called NeuroPsy. Just to confuse you, Neurospin, Neuropsy. And this building is a neuroscience building collecting all of the neuroscience labs from GIF, from Orsay, from the whole area. The Paris-Saclay neuroscience will all be there. So this will be, I think, a very strong set of two buildings working together to study the brain. They're all entirely focused on the brain. And it's no secret that Neuropsy has some existing teams, but is also calling for external teams. There was a first call, which is closed now. There will be a second one, right, Brice? So I think don't miss these calls, because there is a wonderful space. It's not so far from Paris, it's only 15 kilometers. So please consider perhaps working with us. And with that, I'll let Timo introduce our speaker.
Not sure if this is necessary. So I'm Timo van Kerkhoel. I work in the lab of Stanislav Dahan. And we're very excited to have Chris Xu here. So he did his PhD at Cornell, went to the notorious Bell Labs, where he did some great work on really developing new lasers. And now he started this, or at some point he started his own lab at Cornell. And at the moment he's a professor of applied and engineering physics at Cornell, as well as the director of Cornell Neurotech. So I'm very happy to have you here, and I'll give the floor to you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm right-handed, so I probably stand here so I can face you and the point. So I'll talk about multi-photon imaging for going deeper in the mouse brain. So how many people are familiar with multi-photon microscopy here? Oh, all very familiar. So I can skip the beginning part very quickly. So first acknowledgement, this work is done by roughly half my labs. Two students did the most of the work and two postdocs. And my lab also do a lot of the fibers and laser development. It turns out to be very synergistic. But today I just talk about an imaging effort. Collaborators, a lot of them help us in different domains. For example, Chris and Izumi help a lot on the animal preparation for us. And a lot of people give me ideas, like David Tank in Princeton, and where's the adaptive optics? Not G on the adaptive optics. And we work with several companies, mostly on the laser development, including now Coherent. We also work together to try to get the best laser for doing deep imaging. Funding, mostly now transitioning to NIH, started with telecom, but now mostly funded by NIH, but also with the Defense Department and the Intelligence Agency, some foundation to support our work. So the motivation is very simple. We want to go deep in the brain. It's really no brainer here, right? You look at the mouse brain, 1 cubic centimeter. This is roughly the best two-photon microscopy could do, this yellow box. Maybe on a good day you go, say, 600 to 700 microns deep. That's a good two-photon performance. A few hundred microns across with hundreds of neurons. That's roughly two-photon performance. So about 10 years ago, I transitioning from telecom back into imaging, I was thinking, can we push this a little bit deeper? Say go twice as deep? Can we do that? And of course, can we also image much wider area to cover many more neurons? Say, can you cover the entire cortical column and things like this? So that was our goal, we start to drive this. And to quantify, that was is in some sense, we still try to achieve this goal, is try to do volume rate of 10 hertz, spatial resolution submicron, at least 1 millimeter deep, and at least 1 cubic millimeter volume. If we can do this, I think we can answer a lot of interesting neuroscience questions. So it's still a major scientific challenge, and hope I can show you that it becomes an engineering problem. We have the tool to do this, just how to make it happen. And if the brain is transparent, we know, like a baby zebrafish, life is much simpler. You can do light sheet microscopy, for example. You can look at the entire brain activity, right? Tens of thousands of neurons. But when the brain is not transparent, you're in trouble because we know cameras does not work. If you go out in a dense, foggy weather, you take a photo, you know you couldn't see much because scattering. If somebody can figure this one out, how to do parallel data acquisition with a camera, that would be a major breakthrough. And we had to try that, and nothing works out very well yet. So, very simple, cell phone camera, I put a lens paper in the front. You can see that photons reach your camera. You can still, you see, this is not dark. Photons are there, but the information the photons carry is lost. And that's what, that is my office in Ithaca, New York, right? Photons are there, but no information. You look at the mouse brain in the cranial window, maybe none of you probably have seen. It's the same thing, right? You have to think about looking through a thick piece of tofu, a thick piece of cheese. It's very hard to imagine to see a single neuron underneath, say, a slice of cheese on the top. So that's what we have to overcome. The technology we use is called multiphoton microscopy, started as a two-photon microscopy by Winfried Denk and Walt Webb in 1990. And I joined Webb's group as a beginning graduate student in 1992. So this is always, I wish I'm a couple years older so I can join on this year. That's the only time you wish you're a few years older than who you are. So brief introduction, very simple idea. A fluorescent molecule typically absorbs blues emitting the green, fluorescence process. For two-photon process, you know, just putting two red photons, combine the energy, making the same molecular transition. And in general, that's the exactly same fluorescence process. And the only difficulty we have to overcome, in fact, we have to always overcome this for any nonlinear process, is that you look at the cross-section of one-photon and two-photon processes. Essentially, the probability of having one-photon transition or two-photon transition. You can see the probability for two-photon excitation. Look at it, the units is always very funny. It's a historical reasons. But you just look at the number. The number is much, much smaller than one-photon transition. That's always, you have something to keep in mind. You do nonlinear optics, the probability is always very small. What you need is a perfect laser for that. So we use a femtosecond laser. So the laser is mostly off. In fact, one part per million typically is on, vast majority of time. It's 99.99% is off. But when it's on, it's extremely bright. By using lasers like this, we can actually make such a small sort of a probability into a reasonable biological contrast. So two photons are useful in that regard with a laser like this. So for a fluorescing molecule, you can see blue photon in, green photon out. That's fluorescing, FDA approved. You can drink if you want, right? Blue in, green out. And two photon, you can see, very trivial. Put the red photons in, combine the energy, exactly the same green fluorescence coming out. Now, because two photon is needed for one molecular transition, then the signal for two photon excited fluorescence goes as intensity squared, okay? It's A plus A equal to 2A, kind of a chemical reaction in a sense, all right? So this nonlinearity turns out to be extremely useful, and the reason is that with nonlinear excitation, you can define a three-dimensionally confined focal volume. You can see that fluorescing solution, fluorescing in water, one photon excitation, blue light, focal point, we can see lots of fluorescence above and below. For two-photon excitation, because it's intensity square dependence, you can see that only the focal point gives you excitation. So this actually is the slide that convinced me to join Webb's group, literally 25 years ago. And the logic is still exactly the same. This nonlinearity, the nonlinear confinement, is essential for imaging deep in scattering tissue. And of course, you raster scan this point, you form a three-dimensional image. That's how it's working. So the reason is, let's take a look at why two photons can go really deep in the tissue. You look at a confocal microscopy as a comparison. You excite fluorescence at the focal volume. For confocal to work, you have to re-image the emission onto a confocal pinhole. Now that works really well without any fog in between, without scattering. So you can image a point to a point. Imagine emission fluorescence gets scattered on the way back to the detection pinhole. Now you can see that's like through dense fog again. Instead of having a very nicely defined point for the fluorescence, you have now a large extended illumination volume. Now you can see the pinhole is not very useful here, right? It cuts away all the photons you actually really want. You go to two photons because we define an excitation point. That means we define the origin of my fluorescence. So in that case, we put as big a detector as we can find, typically like a centimeter. You collect all the light coming back. Now that is good because nothing is wasted over here. Now in addition, as I mentioned, for nonlinear excitation, we use lower energy photons. That means they're longer wavelength. Longer wavelength typically reduces the impact of scattering. And that's why the sky is blue, sunset is red, right? Scattering is reduced as you go to longer and longer wavelength. So if you look at the advantage of nonlinear microscopy is two. One is nonlinear confinement. This issue gives you about 100 times improvement in signal collection, where they go deep. Deeper means, say, three or four scattering length into tissue. And the second issue is this longer wavelength. And if you go again, a few scattering length deep, you still get about a factor of 100. So you combine them, you can see that's why it works so well. 10,000 times improvement comparing with, say, typical confocal microscopy in the blue wavelength. Okay, so nonlinear confinement and longer wavelength. And just to emphasize, this is the key, the ability to form a sharp focus in 3D. That's all it matters if you want to go deep into tissue. Once you can do that, you have penetration depth. So what's limiting two photon then, right? Okay, two photon is great, we talked about it, but why can't I go through the entire mouse brain or even the human brain? What's the problem? The biggest problem is tissue scattering, as we know. Imagine a photon coming in, aimed at the focal spot. Distance, I give you a scale, right? You want to go, say, a millimeter deep. The focal spot typically is half a micron. So that means this is 1,000 microns and this is half a micron. You can imagine photon come in, try to reach this point. It's like what? It's like a sniper trying to shoot a human being from 1 kilometer away. Right? It's the same scale. Now imagine a photon coming in gets scattered along the way. Scattering means it will slightly deviate from its ballistic trajectory. When that happens, its chance of reaching here is zero. Imagine a sniper shooting a guy 1,000 yards away. Of course, the bullets hit something between, you have no chance, right? So that's the biggest problem. That means the excitation photons, the number of excitation photons at the focal volume goes down exponentially as a function of depth. So exponential decay of the signal is really the biggest issue. And second, okay, just to emphasize this, experimentally proven, we image the vasculature, look at the fluorescence brightness as a function of imaging depth. It's a semi-log plot, log scale on a vertical axis. You can see the fluorescence goes down linearly in this semi-log plot. Of course, linear in semi-log plot means exponential decay, right? You can clearly see the signal goes down dramatically. When you go this deep, you go down by 5 orders of magnitude. It's a huge penalty for going deep into tissue. And second, the brain is not a piece of optical glass, right? That'd be nice, but it's not, right? So you have optical aberration, because you can see there's stuff in the brain that's different index. You have heterogeneity, and that causes optical aberration. What that means is that your signal will be decreased because you can't focus really well. And not only that, your resolution gets poorer. You can't resolve as well. So both are bad stuff. And lastly, even if you got signal this deep generated, you still have to propagate back up. It's all in epi, right? You do in vivo imaging, typically do epi detection. There's not much choice. You can detect in the bottom, right? So, and the signal absorption through the tissue, the fluorescence absorption by the tissue becomes significant. If you quantify this, about 5 orders of magnitude, about 10 times over here, maybe 5 to 10 times for the last issue, okay? So you want the imaging deep, you really have to get those factors back as small as possible. Otherwise, you're suffering 10 million times if you want to go millimeter deep. Now that's very difficult to do experiment. So what's our strategy? very simple imagination, right? You start to think. We first think about why two-photon works so well. I just mentioned there's only two reasons two-photon works so well. That is nonlinear confinement and longer wavelength. That's the reason. If you want to imagine what's a new idea, the simplest solution will be we push it to longer wavelength and we add a photon to it. So very simple logic, right? It takes literally, you can think it's very simple, a little bit crazy, but it really works. And if you put a time scale on this, it takes 1 minute to come up with the idea, literally 1 minute all you need. It takes 1 hour to show that it won't work, so you'll give up. It takes a couple of days to think it might actually work, and it takes 3 years to make it work. That's a PhD thesis, that's roughly what it is, right? So you need a little bit of quantitation to understand the 1 minute, 1 hour, and 1 day issue, so why it's the case. So why it's a little bit worrisome to go to long wavelength and three photon imaging? The first issue is water absorption. This plot really worries people. This is the water absorption on log scale. So this each notch is a factor of 10. Now, typical two photon with a Tasafa wavelength is sitting over here. You can see water absorption is very small. You go to long wavelength here, longer wavelength here, you can see the water absorption goes up dramatically by 1 to 2 orders of magnitude. That worries people. It's like you're absorbing so much, you're increasing the absorption so much, how can you make it work? You cook the tissue before you can image the tissue. The second issue, as I just mentioned, two photon cross section is already very small. Now we're going to go to three photon excitation. The cross section is really small. Look at the number here, right? One photon, two photon, three photon. The number is really almost non-realistic. And these are the two reasons, actually, we got two grant applications rejected in the very beginning, about 2010. People say, it won't work. You heat the tissue, and the cross-section is just too small. It won't work. But you need quantitation for that, because, first of all, you do in vivo imaging, right? In addition to water, you also have blood. It's hard to get rid of blood if you want to image the mouse alive, right? If you look at the blood absorption, it really dominates in a short wavelength. If you put it together, this is physiological blood content in the brain. About 10% of all in the brain is about blood. You can see, now you look at this, the absorption difference between typical Tasafa wavelengths and the two-photon wavelength and these long wavelengths, the difference is much smaller because blood absorbs in a short wavelength. So first of all, the difference is not that big in the absorption case. And second, you really win a whole lot by reducing scattering as you go to longer and longer wavelengths. These are called scattering coefficient. The smaller the value, the lower the scattering. So you can see by going to longer wavelength, so from 800 to 1300, you're down by a factor of 2. You go to 1700, you're down by a factor of 3 to 4. So you really win in this case. So if you put it together, okay? Absorption, Beer's law, decay. Scattering, also exponential decay. You combine those things together, it's multiplication. You sum up the exponent. You can define a new length scale. We call it effective attenuation length, essentially, is combining absorption and scattering, right? You put it together, you find it looks like this. These peaks are peaks of water absorption. The general trend follows this scattering curve. You can see now, 800 is not very good. That's typical Tasafa wavelength. 1300 and a 1700 window, right? Looks much better, much lower attenuation. Lower attenuation means the excitation photon can reach much, much deeper. That's what it means. That's a simple calculation. Of course, you do experiment, you can find out. These data are shown up by many groups. You can see it matches quite well. Experiment 800, experiment 1300, experiment 1700 nanometer. So the simple model really works out reasonably, with brain tissue at least, right? So the best window are those long wavelength windows if you want to reduce excitation attenuation, the exponential functions. So let's hammer this water absorption issue sort of a little more. So what's the problem with water absorption? Again, blood absorption, water absorption. Okay, in vivo, so the curve looks like this, right? Again, typical two photons here. What we do is over there now, longer wavelength and three photons. So let's look at the comparison. Absorption, 1300, absorption, 900, 800, is a difference by a factor of 2. We do absorb here, factor of 2 more by the coefficient. But what happens is, you win scattering by a factor of 2, right? Seems like, hey, it's a factor of 2 and a factor of 2. What's the big deal? The big deal is this. If you look at the math, absorption, too much absorption, what do you do? Reducing power, right? Reducing power of excitation. That compensates for the absorption. That's in the coefficient. You win scattering, as we talked about, that's in the exponent. So I always say, why this wins? You lose linearly, but you win exponentially. If you know any little math, you know exponential win is what you want, right? Compounding, in a sense, if you do stock market, right? But in addition, in fact, the gain is even bigger because this is sort of a simple-minded analysis. What you need, because we're talking about brain tissue, photons don't go straight through the brain tissue. If they do, that'd be awesome, but they don't. They zigzag because of tissue scattering. When that happens, you have to use actually called effective absorption coefficient. It's a random walk calculation, which is well known in diffusive optics. You have to use this parameter. Essentially, you have to use the geometric mean between absorption and scattering. In that case, you can see you give up 2, you win 2. This number actually doesn't change. That means the effective absorption between this window and this window essentially are exactly the same, which experimentally also shows up to be the same. Now, over here, you give up maybe a factor of five in absorption. You gain a factor of 3 in scattering. So this number is a little bit worse. But on the other hand, once again, you lose linearly, you win over here by a factor of 3 exponentially. So, and this shows very easily. So we started to do this about 10 years ago to show long wavelength really works. So we imaged the mouse brain vasculature by using 800 nanometer 2 photon and 1300 nanometer 2 photon. Very simple. Injecting 2 different dyes, fluorescing, excitable at the shorter wavelength, Alexa 680, excitable at the long wavelength. We just compare them, right? So you can see it's very easy to compare. At the surface of the vasculature, the image look exactly the same. In fact, we make sure the photon numbers in signal are exactly the same over here and over there. Then all we do is just image deep. We just push the objective down, right, as we do 2 photon 800 and 2 photon 1300. You clearly see the vasculature we can image much deeper using longer wavelength, right? Tisapharm laser typically 500-600 microns, you kind of top out. But this one you can see easily a millimeter. And in addition, it's a major advantage you overcome the shadow effect of blood vessels on the surface. You can see over here, lots of blood vessels. Over here, you can see kind of shadowed the dark areas by the top layer, large blood vessels. So it's going through the blood vessel much better, so the shadow is less. And you can see the movie of blood vessel structure. This is the depth, 400 by 400 micron field of view, going from surface all the way to about 1.6 millimeter into the mouse brain. In the gray matter area, in the frontal cortex, right? So it goes deeper and deeper, but now I want to focus on so-called contrast issues for 2 photon. You can see as you go deeper, blood vessels are still there, but the contrast gets worse, right? Inside and outside the blood vessel, you can see. You can kind of still see the blood vessel, but the contrast is getting worse and worse. And that turns out to be fundamental for the microscopy technique we have. Because you want to image that deep, that means what? All the excitation photons have to go through all the superficial layers on the top. And now, if you label blood vessels like this, all the blood vessels will be labeled, right? It's not like you only label something here. You label everything on the top. That means if you go deep enough, eventually all of these will give you a little bit weak excitation. But when you sum it up, it becomes very significant, okay? So this shows actually on this curve very nicely. You can see exponential decay, which is what we expect. As you go deep enough, you can see here it plateaus. In fact, you can go plateauing all the way to infinity. What happens is that if you go this deep, eventually the weak excitation when they combine on a superficial layer will actually overwhelm the signal generation that deep for 2-photon microscopy. And you can look at the contrast differences at the 1 millimeter, looks quite good. Black and white, that's what you want. But blood vessel is labeled. You go deeper enough, you can see blood vessels kind of there, but outside is almost just as bright. Right? It's not lack of signal, by the way. We actually sit there, integrated this image for almost 4 minutes just to make sure we have enough photons to show up. Right? So that's not lack of photons. It's just because the contrast is so low. Right? And theoretically, you can also estimate about 5 to 6 scattering length. you reach the fundamental limit for two-photon microscopy in a uniformly stained sample like this. Okay? So that's, yeah.
Do you have it only at this depth, not before the surface is like
80? Yeah, you have it all the time, but at this depth, it kind of reached absolute limit, means it's kind of overwhelm the focal point. Yeah, the curve is good until that point, because you, even a contrast of factor of 2, the image looks great, actually. That's what it is. Because our eyes are so good to piece out this little bit contrast in the blood vessels. If you look at the last one, for example, like this one, you can still see the blood vessel, right? Even though the contrast essentially is 0. The pixel value difference is only 1, even after integrating for 4 minutes, right? So, but the eye is really good to sort of trace out those faint little things. You can still see that, right? So that's where the three photon coming in. So as we talk about this ability to form a three-dimensionally confined focal volume is due to nonlinearity. So you can see two photon excitation without scattering in a log scale, right? This is my focal plane, let's see, right here. Away from the focus, the fluorescence goes down. This is like a line profile across the focal point like this, a line profile, right? Very localized. Here's a log scale, by the way. This is a million times lower than this. You go to three photon, sure, you go to much better confinement because it's high order nonlinearity. It goes down much steeper away from the focus. This Z is the distance away from the focus. So we know that for a long time, even 25 years ago, as a grad student, I already know that. It's gonna have something to do. But we don't know what to do with this. We don't have any application. We don't have any context to think about this. The context when this becomes useful is when you have tissue scattering. Now, in addition to the geometric focus, like here, the focal point, you have this exponential function we talked about, the exponential decay function. So two profiles multiplied together. Now, in addition to the focal point, you have a lot of stuff above your focus because of this exponential function. So the background generation is the sum of all of those things, right? Now you can see if you go deep, this suppression of, say, 2 to 3 orders of magnitude becomes very important. Okay, without scattering, you're comparing 0 to 0s. Essentially, you never see that. With tissue scattering, as you can see, now this becomes very useful. So now it turns out in this case, these two ideas, this long wavelength approach and three photon approach, is really very synergistic because if you want to use long wavelength right now to do two photon excitation, you basically don't have dyes to look at, particularly for in vivo imaging. If you think about fluorescent protein or some very good in vivo dyes, these wavelength for two photon is just too long, right? This will need 850 nanometer one photon excitation. It's almost nothing. This will need a 650 nanometer excitation. There's a few you can do, but not many. If you add a photon, you can see, very nice, for 1300 nanometer windows, you can image blue and green fluorophores, green fluorescent protein, or GCAMPs. It just matches very well. If you go to orange and red fluorophores or fluorescent proteins, this is their one photon absorption peak. You multiply the wavelength by 3, you can see the number lands very strict, very nicely on the 1700 nanometer spectral window. So in this case, these two approaches are very synergistic, or very lucky in a sense. You have the two windows to match blue, green, orange, and red fluorophores. So it's kind of pretty naturally, you can combine those things. So the last issue we have to overcome to make it useful is this. The cross-section is really small. We still haven't addressed that. How do you make it useful? This is what I did in graduate school. As I told you, I know all those things in grad school, just don't know how to do it, how to make it useful. So we used a titanium sapphire laser. We imaged DAPI stained DNA in a cell, no scattering, just all transparent single cell. We get nice images, three-dimensional reconstruction, 50 microns, I don't know how many microns, just three-dimensional reconstruction of this. But we actually have to use 50 milliwatts of power to get images like this. If you scale this for the mouse brain, you would need something like 5 watts if you want to image any significant depth in the mouse brain. If you do that, I think the mouse probably won't be happy, right? It's too much power you do. So the trick is very simple, actually. You have to use a different laser to drive the three-photon process. And in two-photon, what you use is a tisapphire laser. The nonlinear signal actually is a function of laser duty cycle. The duty cycle is the repetition rate multiplied by the pulse width. Essentially is the fraction of time the laser actually is actually on. Makes sense? But the laser is mostly off. For a small fraction of time, they're turned on. So this number, for Tisapha laser, you can see, it's on 10 parts per million. That means 10 to the minus 5. For Tisapha laser, only on for 10 parts per million, right? If you use lasers like this, that's what we did. You can see it's inefficient because you go to 3 photons, your signal is down by 1,000 times. That's why it's not practical if you use lasers like this. But now, because the 3-photon process goes as inverse squared of the laser duty cycle, that means if I reduce the laser duty cycle by using shorter pulses or lower repetition rate, if you do that with a few milliwatts at the sample, you can see the signal for 3-photon and 2-photon you typically get are very much comparable. So the key thing to realize to make it useful is that you have to use a different laser, probably at the few megahertz, but with more energetic pulses for 3-photon microscopy. Otherwise, it's sort of like you have a different engine for a different car kind of idea, right? You have to drive it differently. Of course, that's why it took about a few years to make it happen, because you look around, laser like this does not exist. So that's the great thing about my telecom background. Actually, we made the laser to make it happen. So that took extra time. So I'll skip all of those. So just to show that it's not just a mathematical analysis, it works in the experiment. So I compare 2-photon microscopy and 3-photon microscopy in the same field of view of the same mouse at the same time. Okay? The same detector, same objective, everything the same. This is 800 microns deep for blood vessel imaging with fluorescein dextran label. 2-photon at 920, 3-photon at 1300 nanometer. You can clearly see the difference. This is the blood vessel, this is the outside. For 3-photon, you can see the contrast, white and black. For 2-photon, you can clearly see the contrast is dramatically reduced. That's not electrical noise, because the same detector is used. This is not dye leakage, because if that's the case, it will be also bright over here, right? It's due to out-of-focus background when you have a uniformly labeled sample when you go deep enough. That's the logic, right? You can also look at a GCAM6 labeled neurons. This is a very densely labeled mouse. We actually want to label 100%. We haven't succeeded that. We try to now go 75%. We'll see how well we can do. But this is very densely labeled. You can see for 2-photon microscopy, this is about 780 microns deep below the surface of the mouse. You can see the blood vessel should be totally dark, which is very dark in 3-photon images. In 2-photon, you can see it's not very dark because of the superficial layer contributes the background fluorescence. And also, you can see a lot more neurons. You can even see nuclear exclusion, right? All the way down there. In 2-photon microscopy, it's very hard to identify those things because of the background goes up as you go deep. And we can quantify all those things. We can draw a line, for example, like this, right? Signal, background, right? You do a division. You can do SBR, signal to background ratio. For 3-photon in the blue, you can see it goes all the way very high, above 30, all the way down to hippocampus. In 2-photon, as you can see, as you go 7 to 800 microns deep, this SBR ratio, the SBR, really goes down to significantly less than 1. That means the contrast is much worse. Okay, we can quantify that. This is for fluorescein. These are for GCAM6 labeled neurons. These are for GCAM6 labeled neurons. These are for fluorescein. Okay? So clearly you can see the difference. Now this is something might be surprising to you, is that the signal is weak for 3-photon because of high order nonlinear excitation. But this I want to tell you is that if you go deep enough, the long wavelength advantage can actually overcome the weakness of 3-photon cross-section. And the reason is actually simple to understand. I'll give you a simple argument, then I'll show you the data. The signal goes as power to the nth power. 2-photon is 2, 3-photon is 3, right? Cubic and square. If you want to maintain signal as you go deep, what you have to do is that you have to exponentially increase the power at the surface because the excitation power goes down exponentially. Make sense? That means if you want to have the same amount of fluorescence coming back at you, you have to increase the power exponentially. Now that's where the long wavelength really helps you. Why? Because the exponential function has a denominator of effective attenuation length. For the longer wavelength, it's longer. For the shorter wavelength, it's shorter. That means one goes up much steeply than the other one. So eventually you can think about it. In the surface, two photons is better. If you go deep, three photons will catch up. That's the logic. And you can see the curve exactly like this. This is power required or pulse energy required on surface to give you a certain amount of fluorescence. At the surface, you can see two photons here, three photons there. That's why it's very obvious. If one of those shallow imaging do two photons very clearly, it wins all the time. Because you have to use so much more pulse energy to get the same signal back. But you can see two photon power increases much steeper if you want to go deep because of the wavelength difference, right? You can see eventually they catch up just about 850 microns or so. That's for fluorescing, okay? If you go GCAM 6, you can see the GCAM 6 difference actually is smaller because the three photon peak for GCAM 6 is exactly the 1300 nanometer, just by luck, okay? For fluorescing, this actually is not the best wavelength to use, all right? So the projected crossover is also around 700 to 800 microns. So what does that tell you? That means if you want to do GCAM 6 imaging, let's say that's what you want to do, that means, and you want to go deep beyond 700 to 800 microns deep, you got to do three photons 1300. There's nothing to lose. Even if you only label one neuron, you get a better contrast and you get a better signal with the same laser power injection, right? So in that case, the changeover is roughly about 700 to 800 microns deep. We can also compare the red, orangey-red fluorophores. This is a TD tomato label neuron, the mouse cell aberrant. The cell aberrant is actually a piece of brain that's actually tougher to image through. It's a folded structure with lots of fibers. So we just show that same comparison works. This is, we haven't published that yet. We got the mouse from Utah, and this is in collaboration with Azella at Oxford. You can see that we can image much deeper at the 1700 compared with 1064 nanometer. Same comparison, same mouse, same time, same field of view, right? This is third harmonic generation, tells you the sort of like the myelin fibers in the mouse brain tissue. This is the neuron, and you can look at the blood vessel imaging too. This is Texas red labeled blood vessel in the cerebellum. And we go all the way down to here, which essentially lose contrast in the cerebellum, and you can see much deeper penetration for the blood vessel imaging. Once again, third harmonic generation, always the second channel you can look at. Again, same mouse, same time, and same field of view. In the cerebellum, actually, it's very interesting because you have lots of these folded structures. You can see the decay curve. This is signal, this is depth, matched the third harmonic generation. You see the decay curve becomes a little bit chunkier instead of like a very nice linear exponential decay. You see the different decay slopes. And the reason is because every time you encounter those densely fiber region, your scattering is much higher. So the decay becomes steeper in those regions. So you have sort of a chunkier decay curve like this, okay? We can image through the unthinned intact mouse skull. In this case, the bone is unthinned and we just cut open the skin and look at the through the bone, right? You can see the bone is over here, third harmonic generation of the osteocytes, the microvasculature all the way down to maybe 600 microns. That's through the intact unthinned skull. And the movie shows you that. Osteocytes, the blue dots, or the green dots, third harmonic. You can see the blood vessel microvasculature, pretty clean, goes all the way down to about 600 to 700 microns. In this case, the bone is untouched, right? And we can also look at neurons in this case, in addition to the vasculature through the bone. You can see the neurons, red fluorescent protein labeled neurons, at about 200 to 400 microns deep, you know, XY frames. We can image over multiple days to find the same neuron through the bone, okay? Once again, the green are third harmonic, the red are the neurons, okay? So these are unthinned skull. You can interrupt me anytime you want if you have questions, okay?
What is the temporal resolution of your acquisition?
The resolution?
Temporal resolution,
these frames, I don't remember, I think normally we do about 4 to 10 seconds per frame, could repetition rate issues, yeah. But I will show you the activity imaging, then we speed it up because you have to look at the much higher frame rate. And again, we want to look for activity as we just transition over, and we use calcium indicators. The data I will show you is using GCAM 6 label neurons, either transgenic mouse or virus injected. We have also done some work with GR gecko with three photon to 1700 nanometer. it doesn't look as good as this, but we still have some data of this at the hippocampus too, but I'm not going to show that today. So we have all shown work on the green stuff, GCAM6 labeled. And we measured the cross-section of the GFP just to make sure the number we talked about is reasonable, and you can see it's within about a factor of 5-ish of what we expect. So the number is pretty boring because nothing new came out of those measurements, but the good thing about that is that we know we can actually saturate those fluorophores way before we reach the nonlinear breakdown threshold. Now that's very important because if you cannot do that, you might worry about nonlinear damage. I'll go back to this point in a few slides. What we first did is compare 2-photon and 3-photon recorded brain activity of the same neuron, just to show that no matter which modality you use, you get exactly the same activity trace. So in this case, it's spontaneous activity of those of one neuron doing 3-photon, 1300, 2-photon, 920 with GCAM6. So you can see we put the 2-photon pulse in between the 3-photon pulses. We switch them back and forth within 1 microsecond. So that means in all practical purposes, these activities are recorded simultaneously. There's only 1 microsecond difference between this pulse and those pulses, right? So you can see the activity traces look exactly the same. 2-photon in the purple, 3-photon in the blue. And we recorded over a couple hours for multiple neurons just to show that the statistics is valid. It's essentially identical. And the delta F over F value actually turns out to be the same also, okay? That's a little deeper than simple sort of a thinking, but we have some explanation for that. Anyway, but the bottom line is that the delta F over F are essentially the same for 2 and 3 photon microscopy. So this is image the layer 6 neuron.
Why should they be different?
Why this will be different?
Why should it be?
This is certainly expected, you would think, but this actually is not so obvious.
Why?
Because the delta F over F is obtained due to absorption spectrum change of the chromophores. If the difference due to quantum efficiency change, then there's no reason there will be any difference. But since the difference is derived from absorption spectrum change, as you know, in 2-photon, you go to 800 nanometer, you don't have any delta F over F. So the absorption spectrum actually changes when it binds calcium. That makes sense? If that's the case, then in principle, because these are two different physical processes, right? One is 2-photon, one is 3-photon. The absorption spectrum could be quite different. But there's a different explanation. That's a long paper. I'm still reading it. But I think there might be some explanation for that. But the bottom line is the measurement shows there's no difference. So this is the deepest layer 6 neurons because you see the third harmonic generation of the myelin fibers of the white matter. And we can see the activity. You can see the neuron kind of lines up with those fibers. They're sort of jammed into those fibers. These are the frame rate, you know, field of view, pixel numbers, mouse age, and the power used. Okay? So that's what this is, and we have success rate in this case is less dependent on surgery. So we have essentially 100% success. Even the window is not perfect, you can still do this for the layer 6 neurons. And we can quantify the fluorescence in numbers of photons per frame. I think this actually is very useful because with the photon counts, we can actually ascertain these, we can actually differentiate noise from signal in a very quantitative manner. Okay, because we know how many photons we have. And these are very much short noise limited fluorescence acquisition. And of course, most people show delta F over F as a function of time. You can pick the neurons, you can see the delta F over F traces. But in traces like this, it's very hard to quantify, is this little peak a real peak or that a noise peak? But with those traces, you can actually say with confidence, do you have 50% confidence or 95% confidence if you know the photon numbers? This imaging through the entire mouse cortex, cortical column, with 18 sections, as you can see in the movie. We take 18 sections from surface all the way down to the deepest layer 6, about 800 microns deep. You can see the purple again. That's the, again, third harmonic of the myelin fiber. So we know we reached the bottom of layer 6, right? Bottom of layer 6. You can recall movies of the entire cortical column. And these are power we use, frame rate, and field of view. Now, we recorded this sequentially, but why do we still do this? The reason is because you can see that if you sum up all those power, that means you can actually have the power budget to record all of those simultaneously. If you can do the engineering to create those sections simultaneously and somehow discern those photons out, which could be done. And in addition, this is done with all three photon excitation. So in some sense, that's pretty dumb because we actually want to do two photons for all those sections because you can reach that with lower power and do the deeper layers with three photons because this is very densely labeled. You can see how green each frame is, right? The cells, the processes. So I think we actually have the power budget now to do something like this of the entire mouse cortical column simultaneously. So that's, of course, a lot of engineering left to do to make it happen. And we want to reach beyond the cortical layers, go through the white matter, reaching the hippocampus. And it turns out this layer called white matter, it's called white matter because it scatters light a lot more. In fact, we can quantify this by looking at the fluorescence decay curve. Gray matter, white matter, and gray matter. You can see the white matter, it goes down much steeper because of more scattering in this very densely myelinated layer. Okay? So about 2.5 times as decay as this gray matter place. But this shows you the SPLA imaging in the hippocampus. The purple, again, is the white matter using third harmonic generation of the myelin fibers. And neurons sort of in the deepest layer, 6, and some other neurons on the top. And this is the fly through the stack as a function of depth from 500 microns deep. Purple, third harmonic. Green are the GCAMP6 labeled neurons. You can see the white matter coming through, see the white matter coming through. And for a little bit, about a millimeter or so, you can see the SP layer coming up, right? So that's the, and you can see a little bit of processes too going further down. So there's actually some more things to look if you can go even deeper than this. And activity imaging in the SP layer, you can see that's this XY frame, about a millimeter deep, and you can see the neuron flash. So watch mouse thinking very deeply over here. And we image the mouse multiple times over several weeks, try to find the exact same neuron to record. This is all spontaneous activity, by the way. We didn't stimulate the mouse in any way. Actually, it turns out in the hippocampus, the neurons are actually always quite active. In the cortex, actually, if the mouse is not stimulated, it's not nearly as active. Not sure any significance for that. Okay, and we can quantify with photon counts. It turns out you need roughly about 130 photons per second, or just about maybe 14, 15 photons in this frame rate to get about 95% confidence rate for those little peaks. This is the brightest neuron. This is the dimmest neuron, just to show the photon traces. And it can do, you know, delta F over F traces like this, right? And just to emphasize, you know, previously people imaged this layer through the white matter. You have to reach, you know, you have to take the brain tissue away, right? Image this. Or what you can do is put a green lens, a gradient index lens, or putting a transparent glass plug, you know, push it down to image this layer. But now we can image this with the superficial layers non-disturbed, right? And the resolution is good. We take a cell, for example, like this. We draw a line, cross it. You can see, we can see the cytosol, the nuclear exclusion, like this, right? You can see the cell, dark in the middle and the cytosol on the edges. So the resolution is still quite good. In fact, we actually have better resolution data to show that the resolution is just about less than 1 micron, XY. The Z is about 3 to 4 microns. So what do we give up? Right? We say it's great, we do three photons, we can long wavelengths deep and others. You must give up something. There's no free lunch. You got to give up something to gain something. What do we give up? One is we have to use higher peak power, more pulse energy at the focus. If you do that, you worry about nonlinear damage. You got to be careful here. Right? If you put enough pulse energy there, you can micro-machine the mouse brain. You can cut things away easily. We have done that accidentally. Right? If you look at the situation, for two photon, typically you put 0.2 nanojoule at the pulse focus. That's two photon is enough. And you saturate the dye at about nanojoule. That means that for two photon, you never need more than 1 nanojoule at the focus. You put more, you're just killing the mouse and doing nothing else. For three photon, we actually use 1 to 2 nanojoule at the focus. And you saturate the dye roughly at the 5 nanojoule. Now, the good thing about this saturation calculation is because we know the damage threshold typically is about 10 to 20 nanojoule. So we're still a ways away. So that's what you should do in the black arrow over here. We're still about 5 to 10 times away from the damage threshold. And this is very much a thresholding event. Usually you go 10 times lower, you have nothing happens. Okay, you can actually quantify that too. So then you just have to be more careful. You don't want to accidentally put a lot more pulse energy to kill some blood vessels and neurons if you put energy like this. And second thing you give up is that we use lower repetition rate. That means you cannot image really fast because you don't have enough laser pulses per second, right? And typically we use, I think this is roughly the optimum at the hippocampus, about a millimeter deep, you do 1 megahertz. That means you have 1 megapixels per second. You can use it to any way you want, right? Frame rate and pixels per frame. You know, you can compromise those two things. But that's roughly what you're gonna get. If you do layer 6 neurons, you can put maybe 2 to 3 megahertz pulses because it's a little shallower. You can put a little more pulse repetition rate. And again, you get 2 to 3 megapixels you get per second, and you put it anywhere you want it. And as hopefully I convince you that for calcium imaging at least, these sampling rate actually is enough. That's the key. You cannot do voltage imaging for sure. But on the other hand, voltage imaging even with 2 photons is a bit too slow. Usually people use a camera to do voltage imaging. For calcium imaging, since these dyes are pretty slow anyway, these speeds are actually reasonable for it. How do we go forward? Next 5 minutes. Okay, the laser is already here, which is great. You have a spectrophysics laser. You have the coherent laser. They are commercially available. They're reasonably robust. These are like the, I would say, if you use the TASAFA laser in the 90s, these lasers are very similar to that. It's pretty good, but it's not perfect yet. They cover both spectral windows, which is very nice. It's widely tunable, computer controlled, and reasonably user-friendly, okay? Basically means, normally it works. If it doesn't work, you have to call the engineer because you can't touch anything. It's all sort of a sealed box, computer controlled. And I think we can improve the repetition rate of those lasers by another 2 to 3 times. And I think they can do it. It's not very hard to do. They are doing it, and hopefully it will come out within the next 6 months. So we can optimize the system fully. And we also adaptive optics. You know, we're changing borrow page from astronomy. The brain is sort of a little bit heterogeneous. A perfect wavefront coming in gets distorted. And that happens, your focal point gets distorted. What you do is, if you can pre-compensate the waves coming in, you can actually cancel out the distortion caused by the brain tissue. That's the logic. That's astronomy has been doing that for decades, you know, looking at the stars in the sky through atmosphere. Now they are perfect with it. In astronomy, we are just starting in the brain stuff, right? But you can also do that. And the deeper you go, the more you want to do this. Because we do 3 photons, the higher order nonlinearity, it turns out, this is also becoming more important. So just preliminary data, haven't published yet, you can see we can get a factor of 5 improvement at about 1.5 millimeter deep. This, I think, is the CA3 neurons in the hippocampus. We barely can see it. We're still working on this. You can see some neurons over here, very faint. All right, this is IFP labeled. IFP actually turns out to be dimmer than TD tomato. If you can label with TD tomato, we probably get a lot better data than this. So one thing we do realize is that when you go to longer wavelength, actually the aberration is naturally reduced because physically what happens for aberration is a phase error in your wavefront. It goes as path length difference divided by lambda. It's very simple mathematics. If your wavelength is longer, your phase error is just naturally smaller. So in the sense that we do need it, but you can see the gain is not as big as I hoped, like 20, 30 times. It's only about a factor of 5 at the maximum. That's what we have seen so far. That's without the bone. Yes, with a cranial window. Yeah. So, of course, we want to push into biology and neuroscience. Certainly, laser is there, a little more expensive still. Long wavelength optics, which is great now, is all available from a variety of microscope companies. You just have to have the money to buy it, it's there. A microscope is not hard to make, so all these are there. And we need fearless biologists who can try this to do some real biology with, right? Otherwise, I can quantify, I can demonstrate. But there's not much biology coming from my lab, right? And the good thing is there's already 10 to 20 groups have either set it up already or they're doing it, you know, hopefully soon to set it up to do some real science with, because only the real science will open this field up. Because people usually, biologists look at me always a little bit suspicious, like, is that really right? Right? If you can do real biology, that changes it. And so you can close the loop between instrument people like me and the neuroscience that advances. So that's, I think, is what the next step would be. In fact, I think I need to get out of this field already because I'm done. So, okay, to conclude, should we abandon two photon? I hope to convince you no. If you want, just want to do this, you know, 500-600 microns deep, two photons still better, lower power, higher speed. Of course, why not? But this technology, we develop three photon at those long wavelength windows, has advantages. If you're going to go really deep, right? For example, mouse hippocampus, I showed you, deep layer of the rat and a primate brain, very useful. If it's really densely labeled, all the neurons are labeled, for example, then maybe even for layer 5, layer 6 neurons, you want to do this because of background generation on the superficial layers. That's for densely labeled brain. And lastly, if you want to overcome a highly scattering layer, such as like mouse skull, the bone, we're imaging spinal cord now through the white matter, actually has some reasonable success. Imaging through dura, Timo is very interested in. And I have data to show, and other people have demonstrated already, we can image it through intact fly cuticle. Sorry, this is misspelled, I guess. I'm not sure. So that actually opened up new neuroscience for fly work, because the fly can now live forever, in a sense, but the cuticle is intact. So we can actually definitely do that. So thank you very much.